Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Song anyway. All right, here we are 2 days later. Everyone still has a hangover. We're like gorillas in the zoo on a Monday after people threw us candy. The fact of the matter is, big deal. Now, the reason I say big deal is because if you actually look at Obama's chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, you'll come to understand exactly who's behind Obama, and you're going to come to understand that basically you reelected Bill Clinton without really knowing it. I mean, it's just basically you're going to see all the Clintonites back again. And in many ways, I think Obama, the social worker, is sort of a front man for the Clinton band. That's the truth here. He was more electable than Hillary. She was sour goods. They saw he was popular. He's charismatic. He drew America. That is the gullible to him. And we have a social worker for president who's wonderful as a speaker. But I wouldn't really expect a radical move to the left, and we're going to talk a little bit about Rahm Emanuel and who he is. But first, what I want you to do is look at michaelsavage.com, and here are the stories in order of importance. Headline, gays riot, want democracy thrown out. Oh, yes, I've warned you, told you. I told you exactly what you're facing here. The people voted in three states, California, Arizona, Florida, and they said no to homosexual marriage. Just keep doing what you're doing. You have all the rights everyone else does. But you're not going to rewrite common sense. You're not going to rewrite law. You're not going to rewrite religion simply because you want to. Just stop pushing us around. Well, the gays took to the streets in L.A. and San Francisco, went into a riot, demanding that the law be thrown out because, well, after all, it's us. We don't want the law. We just want rules, our rules. So they shopped it again to the filth called the California State Supreme Court, the dirty bums in black robes. And I predict if the filth in black robes in California overturn the people again, there'll be over 150,000 people in the streets demanding they be impeached. There could even be, and I am not suggesting it, there could be citizen arrests of these judges if they do it again. It's happened before. It may happen again. And we'll have to wait and see. Again, I'm not calling for a citizen arrest of the justices. I'm saying it could happen. Topic number two on MichaelSavage.com is Barack's new enforcer, Rambo. They say Chicago-style Emanuel hardwired to go for the jugular. And we have a couple of stories that you're not going to read in your local paper about him. Obama's chief of staff, a Freddie Mac alum. That you didn't know? Obama's chief of staff, a Freddie Mac alum, will media notice. Senior advisor for former President Bill Clinton throughout the 90s, was appointed to the board of Freddie Mac when he left the Clintons. And Clintons' going-away gift to Rahm Emanuel was a seat on the quasi-governmental Freddie Mac board, which paid him an awful lot of money in 01. And, of course, as you know, these groups lowered the standards for borrowing and caused the runaway collapse of Wall Street. So he's now in charge. Good man, though. Marine and wife tortured and slain. Four of his men arrested. Again, you'll have to read the story to find out what this is about. A Brooklyn-raised Marine sergeant and his new bride were tortured and killed execution style in a California home, allegedly by four other Marines under his command. We had a dig to find the four Marines accused in slaying of their sergeant. Side note, the sergeant was white. His wife was black. The four accused are black. Here's a sad story because it makes no sense. Jindal rises in GOP's Next Generation. Again, the idiot Republicans are going in the wrong direction. Here it is, the clueless fools running the Republican Party pick Governor Bobby Jindal as the new star for the party. I've got news for you. He's not going to play outside of Louisiana. Next story, tycoon armed drug thugs to target U.S. San Francisco voters surprisingly conservative on issues. Despite the city's far-left reputation, San Franciscans defeated a host of liberal ballot measures and voted in favor of keeping junior ROTC in the public schools. Mainly the Chinese and the black people said no to the far left. We love JROTC. Voters also nixed most environmental state ballot measures. You didn't know that. There's so many other stories, and I'm going to get to them slowly on the Savage Nation today. On the bottom left now on my site, I have a health story for you. I try to put health articles on the site because I spent over 25 years as a leader in the alternative health movement, and I figure I'm still interested in it. Maybe you are too. Let's go back to the lead story, Rahm Emanuel, and who he is. The best thing written about it, believe it or not, is to be found on my website from Wikipedia. Now, I want to point something out. If you read the Wikipedia article about Rahm Emanuel, you have to read through about 16 pages until you get to his personal life. I find that intriguing because, in my case, the false reports about my personal life are front and center on Wikipedia, just to show you how twisted these people are. So let's read the personal life of Rahm Emanuel. Hebrew, was born in Chicago, Illinois. His Hebrew name is how it's said. His first name in Hebrew, Rahm, means high or lofty, while his last name, Emmanuel, means God is with us. Now, his father was born in Jerusalem. His name is Benjamin, pediatrician. But interestingly, his father is a former member of the Irgun, which is a militant Israeli organization in the 1940s. Some would call the Irgun a terrorist organization, but I'll leave that to the historians to decide. Emmanuel's older brother, Ezekiel, is an oncologist and bioethicist, but here's an interesting one. His brother, Ari, is a talent agent in Los Angeles who inspired Jeremy Priven's character, Ari Gold, in the HBO series Entourage, which I detest, by the way. I think it's the lowest series on television. Emmanuel himself is also the inspiration for the character Josh Lyman on The West Wing. When his family lived in Chicago, he attended Bernard Zell Ansch Emmett Day School, a Jewish day school. After his family moved to Wilmette, he attended public school, Ramona School, Willamette Junior High School, and New Trier High School. Rahm Emanuel was encouraged by his mother to take ballet lessons as a boy, and is a graduate of the Evanston School of Ballet. He won a scholarship to the Joffrey Ballet, but turned it down to attend Sarah Lawrence College, an extremely left-wing art school with a strong dance program. Now, he's been dancing his way through the political spectrum ever since. Graduated from college in 81. Got a master's in speech and communication from Northwestern in 85. And while a student at Sarah Lawrence, he joined the congressional campaign of an unknown man from Chicago. His father, still practicing medicine near Chicago, emigrated to the United States from Israel and spoke Hebrew with his son when Emmanuel was a boy. Emmanuel volunteered as a civilian volunteer in the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, during the 91 Gulf War, serving in one of Israel's northern bases, rust-proofing breaks. Emmanuel's wife, Amy Rule, is a graduate of the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, and she converted to Judaism shortly before her wedding. They are members of Ansh Shalom, a modern Orthodox congregation in Chicago. They have three children, etc., and so on. And the rabbi says it's a very involved Jewish family. Emmanuel has said of his Judaism, I am proud of my heritage and treasure the values it has taught me. Emmanuel's family lives on the north side of Chicago in the North Center neighborhood. Emmanuel trains for and participates in triathlons. From work earlier in his career, Rahm Emanuel considers Mayor Richard M. Daley, Senator Paul Simon, and President Bill Clinton to be his professional mentors. Now, I think that the Clinton crony, who is now Obama's chief of staff, should actually relax many of you who fear that Obama was a stealth Marxist. Obama may be a stealth Marxist, but I sincerely doubt that he's going to be able to enact his social worker tendencies under the rule of Rahm Emanuel. Now, that leads me to the next, let us say, surmisal or postulate or musing, if you want to put it that way. I noticed that the Hitler of Iran, Ahmadinejad, the little maniac who said he was going to blow Israel off the map and then attack the West, the psychotic Hitler of Iran, who was speaking the same language of Hitler for the 1930s, sent a peace offering to Obama saying he would love to speak with him. Now, why do you think the little Hitler from Iran wants to speak to Obama? Mike has a suspicion, because the Hitler from Iran, which has the Iranian Secret Service at his disposal, knows that Obama's being run by Rahm Emanuel and others. And he recognizes that there just might be some atomic surprises in his Christmas stocking owing to his violent rhetoric. And so he sends out a missive to Obama. Oh, let's talk, Obama. You're a nice guy, not like that mean Bush. Now, this leads me to the next statement, what Obama should do to solidify support throughout America. Because I have a shocking proposal for Mr. Obama. My proposal of what Obama should do to solidify support in America will be heard right here in the Savage Nation the minute I come back. Savage. All right, so if you missed the opening segment, I can't go back. If you come late to class, don't blame me. I exposed from Wikipedia who Rahm Emanuel is, which is in some way a mixed bag. I mean, he worked for Freddie Mac, which of course explains that he doesn't know what he's doing with regard to economics. That's number one. Number two, he studied to be a ballet dancer. And number three, he's been a lifetime a political guy. But most importantly, from my point of view, is that his father was a member of the Irgun, which some call a militant group, others would call a terrorist group in the early days of the formation of the State of Israel. His father was obviously a very brave man in the sense that he was willing to put his life on the line for something he believed in. So his son is probably a very tough guy. I'm sure of that. But the point I was making is a little different. Iran puts out a peace offering like, let's meet, he says to Obama, because they know that the man, the chief of staff, is Rahm Emanuel. Now, what I said before the break was what Obama should do to solidify support, and that is to become far more militant than Bush against Iran and then Afghanistan terror groups. If Obama were to surprise the world by bombing Iran's nuclear sites literally the day after he took office on January 21st, it would solidify his support in America in a way you can never imagine. He would do what we've been praying that Bush would do, but Bush lost his nerve and Bush was compromised owing to the multifaceted elements that are controlling the Bush administration, notably the contractors who wanted the war and do want the war to go on as long as possible for greedy purposes in Iraq. No matter how noble the intent may have been in the invasion of Iraq, and perhaps there were some noble elements to rid the people of this mass murderer, Saddam Hussein, there really was no reason for this to go on for 6 years other than greed. And if you don't buy the greed argument, then he was the most incompetent commander-in-chief in the history of America. Okay, misusing the troops, misusing the finances, and misusing, most importantly, the will of the American people, which is why Obama got elected, amongst other reasons, including running the dunce John McCain, who, of course, not only didn't want to win, but was a fall guy, in my opinion. So to get back to my main point, if Obama were to shock America and the world by bombing Iran's nuclear sites, even the conservatives would rally behind Obama because they'd say, thank God we finally have a leader with guts. You know, just because people are a Democrat doesn't mean they're all pacifists. Many of them are loud pacifists, but behind the scenes, there are very conservative Democrats. There have been throughout history. Need I say FDR led America through World War II? Democrat. He had the guts to wage the war against Hitler and the war in the Pacific against Japan. So the fact of the matter is, this could become a conservative Democrat administration. It's just possible it could happen. I don't know what's going to happen, but I knew if Obama bombed Iran in late January, when I say I bombed Iran, I mean the nuclear sites, he would get probably a 95% or 90 to 95% approval rating here in the United States of America immediately. Moreover, the world would suddenly understand that they can't push America around anymore. And what Bush tried to do, he will have achieved. In other words, if Bush had done it, they would have attacked him. But if Obama does it, they'll support him. Okay, overtly and covertly. Of course, the press, which is worthless, the midstream media, which he has owned now from the beginning, would salute his bombs as they did Clinton's bombs. Because I will remind you that as Clinton's bombs fell on the innocent Serbian people, and he killed thousands of innocent Serbian people, the press was either silent or supportive of Bill Clinton's bombs. You see, when a bomb has a D on it, it's a good bomb. When a bomb has an R on it, it's an evil bomb. That's the way the morons in the media work. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Incidentally, my book, Psychological Nudity, is moving like crazy. I don't know what happened over the last few days. Maybe you're buying for the holidays because you know that it's now or never. And really, I thank you. It's amazing. It's very satisfying that I was able to beat Publishers Row. For an old writer like me, a man who published over 20 books through mainstream New York publishers, or close to 20 books, I don't have the number. It is so satisfying to be able to write every word myself, design the book myself, have the book printed myself, offer it on my website and talk to you directly. No bookstores. There's nothing wrong with bookstores. Mrs. Savage is in a bookstore every night buying books. She's an avid reader. In fact, she's a bigger reader than I am. I'm stuck on one book right now. I've been for months, which is The War in Italy and Sicily in 43-44. And not to digress too greatly, I'll tell you why I'm reading about the war in Italy in 43-44. Because I, like most spoiled rich white Americans, tend to think life isn't good enough for me. But all I got to do is open the book and I look how the Italians suffered and how the American troops suffered and even how the common German soldiers suffered. What they suffered through is overwhelming. And every time I look at it, I shake my head wondering how in the world they lived through it. When I realized that after the Germans were driven out of, I believe it was Naples, they blew up the sewage lines running into Naples and running out of Naples. They blew up the water pipes coming into Naples. They blew up almost all the factories. The people of Naples were reduced to scraping for rubble. The Italian people were drinking water out of sewers, according to reports. You think you could live through that?
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Now, how come I'm not like everyone's depressed? You know, I went into a sushi shop here in San Francisco today, and it's run by very nice people. I believe they're from the Philippines, and they're very conservative because they've lived through pretty hard times, and they understand what socialism does to the small businessman. I didn't say a word. I was waiting online like all the other nobodies. And when my turn came, they said, Michael, would you like this or that? They said, well, we see that you don't have an appetite today. I didn't say anything other than the following, surrounded by the people with the nose rings, the earrings, the green hair. I said, yes, the little children have never lived through socialism. And I saw several of them turn their head. The little children suddenly turned their heads. Dan in West Virginia, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello. I think one of the sweet ironies of this election was that the gay marriage was defeated and the issue 8 passed because of the increased black and Latino turnout because of the Obama being on the ticket.
You know, that is the most astute observation I have yet heard in post-election, Dan. It is the unexpected result of the far left signing up black people who probably never would have voted. And they thought they could count on them to push a gay agenda. Little did they know that the black people actually think that in addition to voting for Obama, maybe they sat there and in their own way actually read some of the propositions and said, hey, what's this one? No, I don't want the gays to marry. That goes against everything I believe in. I'm against it. You know that 7 out of 10 blacks in California voted in favor of banning gay marriage. You know that.
Oh, absolutely.
But listen to this. California, Arizona, and Florida. Gay marriage was on the ballot. In every state, gay marriage was knocked out, thrown out, tossed out, door closed, end of story. But what you're saying is because so many blacks who probably wouldn't have voted were either encouraged to vote or whatever you want to put it, through ACORN, other groups. So they did not turn out to be automatic lockstepers with the left-wing agenda.
Right. Absolutely.
And Dan, how did you figure this out?
Well, I went on the Internet and read the statistics for who voted for it and who didn't, and I drew my own conclusions. They didn't draw the conclusions online, but I just put two and two together.
That is unbelievably brilliant, Dan. May I ask what your profession is?
I'm a truck driver.
See that? I've said 1,000 times, never underestimate the average American. This is exactly what's wrong and what's right with America. The elites think that because you drive a truck, you don't know what you're talking about, that you're just a dummy. They have always underestimated you, Dan. You are the heart and soul of America. You are who won World War II. You are the reason America's a great country. Dan, you don't even have to give me a favorite story. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity because you just strip bare something no one else has seen. I want to thank you for being such an intelligent man. Please stay on the line. We'll send you a copy of the book immediately. Isn't that wonderful? 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Sal, WIND. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. My grandfather gave me a book called The Battle is the Payoff. He's been passed on for about a year and a half now. But it's called The Battle is the Payoff, about during the time in Sicily with World War II. I heard you talking about the book, and I'm not sure what the name of the book you're reading was, but it's an excellent book.
This is a new one by a new military historian. I don't have it in my hand. It's the war in Italy and Sicily, 43-44. I never knew the devastation of Italy was so complete. I had no idea, for example, in a town with, let's say, 12,000 houses, four were left. Not solely because the Germans blew them up, but our own Allied bombs blew them up as they were chasing the Germans out. I mean, it was unbelievable what the Italians suffered.
Yeah, it really talks about, it keeps all politics out of it. It's very fundamental about how our first wave during that, when Italy was taken over, how we first invaded them. And it's a really educational book. It's great.
Are you talking about the invasion of Sicily or the invasion of the mainland across the Salerno Straits?
When we went through the mountains.
Okay, the mountains of the main body of Italy. Up the center of Italy, up over the Monte Cassino, that battle and things of that nature?
Yeah.
Terrible. I never saw anything like this. I never saw the men had such grit and strength. Do you know that the 10th Mountain Division was made up of an awful lot of men, incredibly tough, hard men, most of whom today would, a good percentage of them, rather, would probably be in Pelican Bay, declared to be white racists, no doubt. But that exact type of iron men. In fact, as a matter of fact, the 10th Mountain Division had a segment of it that was made up of loggers, ne'er-do-wells, criminals. In other words, the shunned of society. They were the toughest of the men. They were some of the best troops that the war had ever seen. And, of course, that's what's wrong with America today. There's so many things that are upside down in this country, I don't know where to begin, other than doing it a day at a time. Sal, my point of saying that I'm reading this book about the war in Italy and Sicily is this. I keep repeating it. I lead a spoiled, white, rich life. I've worked for it. I earned it. I've worked every day since I'm 5 years old. I started selling used comic books on the stoop of my apartment building in the Bronx, which was a thrill for me to buy a comic book, mark it down. Dad said, "Did you know you could resell that comic book?" And I said, "What?" "But I've read it, Dad." He said, "But look at it. It looks like new." I said, "What kid's going to buy a used comic book?" He said, "Michael, just listen to me. Get a crayon." What were comic books then? 10 cents? I guess that was a lot of money. He said, "Run a line through the 10 cent. Mark it 5 cents. Make a stack of the used comic books, put them on a soapbox, put them outside 829 Longfellow Avenue," and they went like hotcakes. So I began by selling used comic books, and I found out what capitalism was. And it was amazing that you could make money with something you had already read. I didn't know you could. The point is that I've worked all my life for what I have. No one gave me anything. In fact, every step of the way was like crawling over glass. The worst part of my professional life was the social engineering of the radical left under the ACLU, who said white men need not apply. I'll never forget it as long as I live, when they wrote, "Some white men will have to put their futures on hold so that minorities may advance." Now, of course, they weren't talking about the rich white men who went to Yale, were they? They weren't talking about the boys born with a silver spoon in their mouth. They were talking about boys born with zinc in their mouth, and they try to put our life on hold. Well, in most cases, they've succeeded, which is why you have broken police departments, broken universities. Virtually every avenue, excuse me, every element of American society is functioning at a probably 50 or 60% level as a result of affirmative action. That's my opinion. The best and the brightest of any race belong at the top of the class. I don't care, for example, that UC Berkeley, my PhD alma mater, has a large percentage of Chinese Americans. And I've said for 10 years, God bless them, they weren't put in there by affirmative action. They got there because they work hard. As a matter of fact, the opposite is true. Do you know that Chinese Americans do so well in school that they're actually given a demerit when they apply to University of California at Berkeley? They don't want any more Chinese Americans. This is another example of the left wing that's out of control. I say if it's 100% Chinese American, it wouldn't bother me if they got there based upon their brains and their hard work. And that's my position. It's not about race. It's about quality. And without quality, you cannot have equality. I've said that for 20 years. Well, now you're going to hear it for the first time. Anyway, I don't want to get into this whole side pocket of the pool game here. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. There was an interesting report this morning on CNBC that I happened to hear, drinking my second cup of coffee. They were interviewing the Wall Street legend Joe Grano. I never heard of him. Former Payne Webber CEO. And he was discussing financial policy in regards to the collapse on the market today. 500 points yesterday, 400 points today. The markets are reacting to Obama's social worker background, and they don't like him. Now, of course, the media is covering up and saying, oh, it's this, oh, it's that, oh, it's this, oh, it's that. The same weasels who supported him at every turn and wouldn't investigate him at every turn. Now the weasels are covering up that the market's reacting negatively to Obama. But listen to what this Wall Street veteran said in clip one.
We're very close to Armageddon relative to the credit markets. And it was a whole group of interdependencies that and missteps along the way since 1999 when Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, HUD were forced to issue and lower their credit standards. And the overleverage from Wall Street, it's very bad.
Let's stop right there. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and HUD forced the lowering of credit standards. Now, you know who did that, don't you? Barney Frank, Rahm Emanuel, the entire Clinton gang forced the banks to lower credit standards. They brought about this collapse that we're in right now. But he goes on into clip two that you must hear. Play it, please.
Let's agree that this is not just Wall Street. This is the whole country.
Right.
The economy is in the midst of a deep recession.
Right.
I think it's going to be with us for at least a year, maybe not longer.
How long for the Wall Street recession?
Well, I think Wall Street, even deeper. First of all, I don't even believe there is any more Wall Street. Goodbye, Bear Stearns. Goodbye, Lehman. Goodbye, Merrill Lynch.
Wall Street is dead.
70, not dead. On life support.
On life support. And, of course, our esteemed, honest press Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson, conveniently permitted his friends at Goldman Sachs to convert themselves from an investment bank into a commercial bank or a hybrid of such on a Sunday evening so that they could qualify for the pork that he was ladling out with your tax dollars. It's astounding that this man's not in prison. Just amazing. It's the biggest robbery in the history of America, and it's going on right in front of our eyes, and we don't even see it. That's how good these crooks are, in my opinion. That's how good we are. And you notice that Obama hasn't said one word about the crooks on Wall Street? He hasn't said one word that if he finds or an investigation finds that they misled investors, they're going to go to jail. He's going to throw the book at them. They're going to seize their assets. Not a word. Why? Because they back both parties. Now you understand what I'm saying to you. So it goes back to what Ralph Nader said the other day that was considered so offensive. You want to play the Ralph Nader piece right now for the people who didn't hear it? If you can dig that one up. I think we had it yet. Yeah, no, it'll take a while because it's not on today's log. I heard it yesterday. Forget it. You don't have to worry about it. Let's take some callers, okay? Let's take some callers. I have such good ones around the country. I don't know which one to take, actually. The truth is, I can't even make a choice. So I'm going to play it by the numbers today. I'm going to let the guys do their choice. I don't want to talk country has lost focus. Let's go to New York. Nabil on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good evening, sir. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Good evening, sir.
first.
Yes,
all,
go ahead already.
Okay, I appreciate your show, and you show like you're very education, you're very educated person. And what I love about you, you give me the chance to talk on air, even you know, I'm Egyptian, American, and I'm Muslim, and you Jew. I really respect that a lot. But let me ask you something. What should we do to lift America up? We, not all the Muslims, they are a tourist. I have a convenience store. Half of my customers, they are Jewish. We love to be together. Forget about the tourists. Because the tourists, we, even the Muslims, we're against them. Our religion doesn't believe that. Our religion doesn't believe suicide. We all live in this country.
I know that. The people who suffered the most from suicide bombings are Muslims.
And our
how come I'm the only one in the media who knows that? That the people who have suffered the most from Islamist suicide bombers are the Muslims themselves. Over 35,000 moderate Muslim people in Algeria and in Morocco, at least 35,000, have been killed by radical Islamists. You know that. And in your home country of Egypt, the Islamists have killed more Muslims, I believe, than they've killed in Israel.
Exactly. I'm in New Jersey. I have a Jewish school next to my door that I buy, I choose my store from all over the town to all the kids to just buy from me, even he knows I'm Muslim. That is the relationship we should look for.
That's exactly, you're 100% right. You're 100% correct. And I'm one of the few people who you can talk to because I understand world history.
I'm Egyptian, I'm Muslim, and I'm so proud to be Muslim. I'm not against you. Muhammad, my prophet, when he show a Jewish funeral, he stand up for the Jewish funeral. People say...
Well, good. Can you send the postcard to this effect to the group CAIR? Maybe they should get a postcard from you.
What I'm trying to say, sir, it's all about love. I'm Egyptian Muslim. I'm married from American Christian. She go on a Sunday in a church. I go on a Friday in a mosque. Religion... We have to keep it on the side. Whatever is in your heart is in your
heart. I understand. We understand this. But we don't need to talk to each other, do we? We know this. It is the radical Islamists who need to be told this. Isn't it true? How come this lesson of love has been lost on Ahmadinejad from Iran? How come he doesn't know about love?
Sir, in your book, in my book, in a Christianity book, we all do the homework. Some people, they pass the exam. Some people, they fail the exam.
Yeah, but he's the leader of Iran who said that he wants to wipe Israel off the map and he hates America, et cetera, and so on. And unfortunately, there are many Muslims in this country who agree with him.
I'm one of the Muslim people, September 11th.
I understand what you're saying. You don't have to beat it up. I heard you. But unfortunately, there are a lot of Muslim people who danced on the roofs of America after the Twin Towers went down. How do you explain that? How did their minds get so poisoned?
When the World Tower went down, I was in St. Joseph Hospital in Paris and giving my blood to the American people.
I understand. You're a good person. But unfortunately, many of the imams in the mosques preach hate. You know that's true, and I'm not going to brush it aside simply because I want to sound like I agree with you. Thanks for the call. I'm in a sweater ready. I'm sure he and I would have a good time together, but that's not the point. He knows what I know. But how do you explain that so many imams teach hatred in the mosques? What, I'm not allowed to observe reality? We all know that's true. These radical mosques all over America, you tell me they're teaching love thy brother? I don't believe it. Not one second do I believe it. John in New York on WOR, go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I got to tell you, you speak, and it's just so good to listen to you because you're one of the few conservatives. No, let me rephrase. You're the only conservative willing to tell the truth about this election. I'm not going to mention names, but you know who I'm talking about. Other talk show hosts, radio show hosts, are just what make me, quite frankly, sick. You know, saying
without mentioning names, what do you mean? Because they're catering already to Obama, saying he's a nice guy, he's a wonderful man. How do they go that way already so fast?
Not even that they're catering, but you know, the press. It's the press's fault. It's the liberal media's fault. You are the only one who has...
Oh, no, it was McCain. No, it was Bush and McCain who did this. It was Bush and McCain who gave us Obama and the Clintonites again. Stay on the line. I'll be right back.
Savage. put it very simply, he is our first African-American president, or he will be, and we wish him well. But his choice, basically, is whether he's going to be Uncle Sam for the people of this country or Uncle Tom for the giant corporation.
Yeah, well, that didn't go over too well with the fellow on Fox News who upbraided Ralph Nader for saying what he, you know, wanted to say. I didn't take it as a an insult. I don't know. Who knows? But on my website, there's a link from the New York Post with my headline, of course, which is Hitler congratulates Obama. And that's the so-called president of Iran. And this is the first time that an Iranian leader has offered such wishes to a U.S. president-elect since the 79 virus of Islamism hit the world. The reason he's doing it is because, as I say to you, Obama may not be the pushover that you think he may be. Just look behind the scenes at his chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel. This is a tough guy. This is a tough guy whose father was a member of the Irgun, which was either a revolutionary Jewish group or a terror group, depending upon whose thumbs were put into the door jam. But the fact of the matter is he comes from a very tough background. His father's a pediatrician and a former member of the Irgun. So this guy's tough. And I believe Iran could wake up to 55,000 degrees and cloudy weather as a result of Ahmadinejad. And that's why they're suddenly Hitler's congratulating Obama. That's certainly my a theory to me. Why not? What do you think, Obama's a weakling? I don't. What, because that idiot Schwarzenegger said he's a girly man and has thin legs? That's his idea of politicking. Another moron. Schwarzenegger's washed up, in case you don't know it. His chief of staff is a lesbian who used to work for Gray Davis. You hear? I'm supposed to believe Schwarzenegger's the image he puts out in the movies. I think Schwarzenegger has thin brain cells. What a stupid thing that was for him to say to Obama. His thin legs. You hear? And he's a girly man. Stupid, Arnold. It didn't work. Schmuck.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We have come to the end of a long journey. The American people have spoken, and they have spoken clearly. A little while ago, I had the honor of calling Senator Barack Obama to congratulate him. Please. To congratulate him on being elected the next president of the country that we both love.
Yep. Thank you. That's John McShane, who's nowhere to be found. We don't know whether he's left the country yet. But I suggest he should leave the country as soon as possible and take a real long vacation. Because this guy was a fall guy as sure as I'm sitting here. He was set up to lose. He did everything wrong. Every time he surged ahead in the polls, he did something to make sure he was set back. Now, whether he knew he was doing that is another story. And if he didn't know he was doing it, it's even worse. Because it means he was never fit to run this country. And his, you know, I said to you along the way, I felt he was surrounded by Brutuses. Most of them were operatives of the Democrat Party. Most of his campaign managers, one of them, in fact, was a consultant to Fannie Mae. What does that tell you? Now, I said, well, how can you actually surmise that? Well, I'm surmising it, but how can I actually prove that? I can't prove it yet. But I'll tell you this, follow the money. If you see that McCain's advisors suddenly get huge, juicy consulting contracts with governmental agencies or wind up working in some way to large contributors to the Obama campaign, and you watch them on it, you'll know exactly what I've been saying to you. You'll know it was true. That's the point. Otherwise, you can't prove anything. How are you going to prove anything? I mean, we're just the peons. You know, we're the people who watch the shadows on the wall and think we're actually seeing the actors. We're only seeing the shadows on the wall as was written thousands of years ago in a Greek drama. Do you really actually see the actors? No, you're seeing the shadows of the actors. So we don't really know what's going on. We can only try to figure it out, which is exactly why both parties want to pass a so-called fairness doctrine. They don't want a vigorous talk show host who has a pair of brains in his head, left and right brain. And I say a pair of brains, I wanted to see if you're listening. They don't want someone who can think. They want the gullible Kool-Aid drinkers in both parties so they can continue to play their sham game on you. And that's when you say, oh, the Democrats want to pass the fairness doctrine. Don't be a fool. There are plenty of Republicans who are behind it, too. I can name five of them. They didn't like what we were saying about them. The problem for them is that there's no legal precedent to target one element of the media, not the entire media. So if they put out a fairness doctrine for the whole media, how are they going to enforce it? What's going to happen when I sue ABC, CBS, and NBC and say, okay, I want time on the evening news? Say, well, no, we already have a fairly balanced group of trained journalists. Yeah, what does that mean? They went to brainwashing school 101, J school? The only people who go to J school are people who can't get a job anywhere else. Who else goes to journalism school anymore? You know anybody with a brain who would want to be a journalist? Moreover, I predict that if the fairness doctrine is tried to pass it, I can't tell you whom, but I know five major talk show hosts are ready to bring a RICO action against Media Matters. That's right. You heard me. There will be a RICO action brought against Media Matters by five major figures in the media, and they will try to sue Media Matters, which is a Stalinist group funded by George Soros, set up by Hillary Clinton, specifically to harass conservative talkers. They will go after the Media Matters group. They will go after them under RICO statutes, racketeering, influence, corrupt organization, and there's a high likelihood they might win. So don't assume that this is just simply going to turn itself into a dictatorship of the left. It won't happen so easily. Las Vegas, Bill, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I'm an independent, and you keep on hearing these things about how extraordinary Obama's campaign was and everything. I think the Republicans over time have become complacent, resting on Reagan's laurels, and kind of putting the country on autopilot, so to speak. But my point is, Mike, I think the U.S. president status at the time of the campaign dictates who's going to be the next president, not the candidate. Because if the economy wasn't in the toilet right now and we were losing sons and daughters in Iraq, McCain would have won by a landslide. But as the president...
No, I disagree. I don't agree with that at all. I don't think McCain could have ever won by a landslide. McCain made one misstep after another, and I'm sorry to disappoint many of you. Palin was his biggest mistake.
But I really believe that...
Do you agree with me that picking Sarah Palin was a big mistake?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I do believe
the
that.
Reason I say that is not because she isn't a bona fide conservative and not that she's a certifiably good woman. She's both. But McCain's chief strength was experience. Obama's chief weakness was a lack of experience. So how did McCain support his experience? By picking the least experienced woman in the Republican Party. That's stupid, idiotic. Did he actually do it? No. His advisors did it to undermine him, to destroy his chances. But if he was too stupid to understand that, then he wasn't fit to be a commander. That's all I can say to you. And I've said it from the beginning. He could have picked, for example, another rhino Republican woman like the senator from, I keep forgetting her name because she's such a piece of wallpaper, Hutchinson from Texas. I mean, she's like Bob Dole in a dress. Kay Bailey Hutchinson, nice lady, country club Republican, as prim and proper as they come, certifiably good country club, check dress Republican woman, but a rhino, a Rockefeller wing of the Republican Party. You know, she's in favor of illegal immigrants, getting citizenship, blah, blah, blah. But at least we know her. At least she has experience. At least we could say if John McCain let's say, got sick or, God forbid, died while he was president, all right, at least we know who she is. Sarah Palin, you want her finger on the trigger? I didn't. I'm sorry. I know many of you are Kool-Aid drinkers and you disagree with me, but I was 3 months ahead of the curve on this one. I'm always 3 to 6 months ahead, if not longer. And that's not an easy place to be every day because you have to sell it. It's very easy to, you know, be right there and you don't have to sell very much. People heard it already on the golfer, the golfing channel. San Francisco, KNEW. Lori is up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
I just want to say that the Savage Nation is the antidote for all of those who drank the Kool-Aid and are still drinking it. The only problem is once you take a little bit of Savage for your antidote, you're walking around like you're in a scary movie with all these zombies, all your friends.
You are in a scary movie. Welcome to reality. Did you see the gays rioting in L.A. and San Francisco, the nice, pleasant, quiet gay community? The minute they didn't get their way and the people spoke? Well, what do you think you're living around? You're living around left-wing terrorists.
Well, this is the belly of the beast. I just don't know what to do with all the people around me. I really feel like I'm in one of those zombie movies where you keep going and driving to get to the sheriff, and then you get to the sheriff, and he's one of them. And it just
they are, particularly in San Francisco. That's right. You get to the sheriff, and you find out that he's one of the invasion of the body snatchers.
Exactly.
But, Laura, you see, that the thing is this. This is why the radical left, the Pelosi wing of the party, wants talk radio silenced on the right. They want you to take the Kool-Aid. They want you to take drugs. They want you to believe that they're not lying to you. They want you to believe that a homicide epidemic in San Francisco is an invention. Lori, if you name one story in psychological nudity that you can't wait to read other than Dead Man's Pants, I'll send you a free copy of the book. Go.
I love your stories about that fat guy, that gangster guy that used to come to your house.
Oh, Fat Al and Tippy the dog?
Right.
All right, that's not – okay, you win anyway. Stan, you're going to win a copy because you need a Christmas present. You're going to get one for free. He wasn't a gangster. He was a pimp. I don't know how you can confuse the two. They're not one in this. No, you know, that's a sweet story. I got to tell you something. That came late to me from my sister, the actualities of it. I didn't know this. Can I tell I'm going to not tell the whole story because maybe you're bored already. I think they're great stories, but I don't want to tell you that. This guy would come over all the time. He had like a 25-inch neck. He was the kind of guy that everyone loved. Big, gigantic guy. Maybe you'd see him in The Sopranos, that type. But he was a heart of gold. The children gravitated to him. Children generally like, I don't know what children know who to like. Let me put it to you that way. Generally, it's not always true. There's some evil people who can seduce children with certain tricks. This guy was a good man. We had no idea what he did for a living, but he played games with us and ball, you know, baseball. I remember this and that. So this is a guy that had like a 25-inch neck and, you know, calves on him that were probably 25 inches around. And for some reason, my dog Tippy took a shine to his leg every time he'd come over to the house for coffee and cake. And, you know, in those days, nobody made a phone call. Nobody sent a letter to set up a dinner party. They rang the doorbell at night, and your mother said, "Who is it?" It's Fat Al. Come on in. And she had dinner in that little four-burner stove with the electric stove. There were always five different dinners and coffee and cake every night. And relatives and neighbors were always in the house because they were close to the community. And it goes on in communities today. Mainly the immigrant communities and the ethnic communities are identical. There's no difference, incidentally. They're very close-knit, and they take care of each other. So we didn't know what he did for a living. But as it turned out, he had a daughter. I didn't know till I was finishing the book, the last day that it went, that his daughter, well, first of all, that he was a man who, we heard he was a desk clerk at a hotel in Manhattan. Why did I know desk clerk? There was a fancy way of saying he was basically a procurer in a nice word, a pimp in a bad word. And that's what he did for a living. So, and he was, by the way, a degenerate gambler. I remember once he came over with he had black eyes, I remember as a kid. And he was just beaten up. They beat him up over a gambling debt. In those days, they beat him up. They didn't kill you. They were smart enough to know if they killed you, they didn't get to collect on a debt. So they gave him a beating, a bad beating. But anyway, he came around asking for money. I remember my father to this day, may he rest in peace. My father was a good man. He came around, you know, needing money. I remember my father gave him, I don't know what it was, $50. Now, you know, $50 then was $500 today. $500 today to a working class guy with a small house with one income, you know, in the family is a lot of money, in case you don't know. It may not be a lot of money to you, but he gave him what he had, $50 at the time. And he went, you know, neighbor to neighbor. He needed it for a gambling debt. But he had a child. And I knew her. I didn't know, you know, who she was. And I learned on the eve of sending the book to the printer that this man, who was a desk clerk, in essence a bordello, brought that child home from the bordello. And she was a love child. And instead of aborting it and throwing it in a dumpster, as too many white girls do today after a night out. Oh, I'm pregnant. Let me get rid of it, Charles. Hold it a minute. I got to go in the back alley. Give me give me a punch in the stomach. That's what life has become to these bimbos today, these drugged up bimbos. Well, I got news for you. This guy respected life enough that one of the prostitutes in the bordello gave birth in the hotel, and he brought the baby home and raised it as his own. But wait, it gets better. I'll tell you the rest of the story when I come back.
Savage.
So I was telling you the story about the fat Al. Okay, it's a fat Pat in the book and Tippy the dog. And it's on pages 17 and 18. If you want to read along, you know, follow the bouncing ball here. But I want to go back to it and make it quick. So I say, but going back to Fat Pat, he worked in a seedy hotel as a night clerk, but he was really a pimp. Now you immediately think he's a bad guy, right? Listen to this before you jump to conclusions. He and his wife could not have children. One day, Pat brought home a little girl from his hotel, a little girl who was the product of one night's lust with one of the girls from the hotel. He and his wife raised that little girl as though she was their own. But wait, it gets better. Years later, Fat Pat brought home another child, this time an infant boy, from hotel lust. His wife's sister raised that child as if he was her own. Years later, after Pat died, that adopted little girl took care of her mother right up until her last day. Do you think today's soul-deprived world would see a pimp bringing home a love child to raise until the end of his days? Whether the two children were from anonymous Johns or were in fact Pats with one of the working girls remains an unknown fact to this day. This is good stuff. I'm sorry. I never read this anywhere. You see what I'm getting at? It's original. Like I am on the radio to you politically, my ideas are original. The writing's original. That's why I want you to have it. This guy was like a character out of The Sopranos. You know, he had a size 25 neck. Good stuff. Tippy the dog will let people in, not out, how our immigration policy should be. Tippy dies and is thrown into a garbage truck. That's a sad story. Yeah, he ate the food, the table food. I give my dog now today, they got the chips. My other dog that died young, the eight-year-old, in those days, 8 years, they said a dog is 10 years. Ever. So he died at 80, in essence. He died at 80. Yeah, it was like 10 years to a dog's life today. It's like they live almost like as long as a person. 15 year, 22. I never heard a dog living to 22. Today, they spend $50,000 to cure a dog of cancer, then it dies anyway. I'm not judging that. I'm just commenting on it. I'm shocked. Then they have can I ask a question about our society, how crazy it is? I know people who want to be cremated who bury their dogs. I said, how come you didn't cremate the dog? Oh, wouldn't cremate the dog. But me, you can cremate. It just shows you the upside-down nature of America today. A dog they bury with a ceremony in Napa County with a tombstone. Me, I don't want a tombstone. I want to be, you could just cremate me. You ever see anything in society like this so upside down? Well, I understand why. I mean, the truth is people are so horrible. I mean, I myself don't trust anyone who walks on less than four legs. I figure if it walks on four legs, you got a better chance of survival than something that walks on two legs. You don't know what a creature on two legs is liable to do. While at least a dog on four legs, you can pretty much predict what it's going to do. They're pretty predictable. You know, the truth is they're predictable. If you're a dog lover, you know what I'm talking about. If not, you think I'm nuts. How can you trust people who don't trust dogs? I'm going to get in a cab with a cab driver who thinks a dog, like a seeing eye dog, they can't, won't even drive in Minneapolis. The Muslims who came from Somalia, that's their wonderful religious view. A dog they wouldn't have, even a seeing eye dog. You hear this? What's wrong with those people up there that they let them get away with that, those liberal patsies? They should throw them out of the taxi business.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. I mean, the whole nation feels as though New Year's Eve was Tuesday night and they're like hungover, you know. That's really what it is, like a giant hangover. How long it's going to last is anyone's guess. I don't quite know. I know that my theory is that Hitler congratulating Obama, when I say Hitler, I mean Iranian so-called President Ahmadinejad, is because he knows that Obama's just liable to be more militant than Bush has been towards him. Because that never made sense. Here's a guy comes to the U.N., spits on America, insults the president. They invite him to Columbia University with a left-wing scum, salute this Hitler. And he's had a lot of fun. But now there's a new guy in town. It turns out Obama may be tougher than you think. You know, Obama's a politician. Remember who he appealed to. He appealed to the crazies in his own party to get himself elected. Promised them the world. But you look at his chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, and you realize this guy's no pushover. And that his Rahm Emanuel's father was in the Irgun should tell you something, you know, in case you're quaking in your boots that we're suddenly going to roll over to the radical Islamists. I don't think so, by the way. I don't think so at all. I'm actually happy that it's Rahm Emanuel. I know he's connected to Freddie and Fannie. I know he's a Clintonite. I know all of that. But nevertheless, he's not an Islamist, okay? Get that through your head. You're never going to get 100% of what you want. The age of the guy you could trust 100%, was it ever true? Do you ever have anyone in politics you could trust 100% or gave you 100% on the dollar? I don't think so. So it's always a mixed bag. So it may not be as bad as you think. There are other stories. The Republicans are so clueless. It says, Jindal rises in GOP's next generation. What are they, crazy? Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal is among a short list of Republicans whose political stars stand to rise. The party looks for new ideas and leadership. What has he done that he should be a leader already of the Republican Party? Nothing. But you know what it is? The Republicans are so racist that they figure because he's not a white man, he might win. You hear this? They sit there like dummies in the country club drinking bad whiskey, and they say, well, that Obama fellow won. Yeah, he sure appeals to those colored people. We have one of them coloreds we can use in the Republican Party? Well, there's that Alan Keyes. Now he's a whack job. No, who's that other one? No, he's been on the news. He's never played. We ran him up the flagpole, and no one saluted. How about that feller down in Louisiana? Yeah, he's no whitey. Let's try him. I mean, this is how they think. Idiots. Morons. How about thinking about the fundamentals that brought you idiots back in power in 94? Called conservatism. Never heard the word? You're embarrassed? You think it's like dirt on your tie, don't you? That's what will make the Republican Party shine. But you know what? They're hopeless. Who needs a Republican Party anyway? I don't want to go into politics right now. I mean, with a whole new third-party discussion. I'll save that for after New Year's. Give me a break. Just been two of the worst years of my life. I don't want it anymore right now. Just give me a break. We'll reevaluate the whole picture after New Year's Eve. I don't want to talk about it. You know what I'm saying? Not right now. That's enough for now. Incidentally, I'm taking a vacation tomorrow and for a few days next week. I need the vacation. I deserve the vacation. I earned the vacation. But in order to keep you listening to the show, I have a trick for you. I am going to call into the show on an irregular basis. I'm going to try to do it every day from an undisclosed location. Actually, it will be several undisclosed locations. And if you're listening at the time that I call in and you get on the show, I'll give you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. So that means you have to listen longer than you normally do. 1-800... MichaelSavage.com. There's so many good topics. I don't know where I want to go right now. You know, I'm tired. I'm exhausted from this. This is awful stuff to go through this for 2 years now, and it's over now. Now what do you want to talk about? That's why I'm reading book. See, storm drops more than foot of snow on Sierra Peaks. Maybe I should go up there instead of the sun. Why do people automatically think you have to go to the sun when you're on vacation? Sit like an idiot and increase your skin cancer quotient. I don't get that. I spent so many years in the tropics. I actually don't like the tropics. This whole concept of bathing in the sea is a relatively new. You know that in the 19th century, people didn't go in the ocean. They were afraid of it. They were probably smarter. You didn't get caught in an undertow. You didn't get swept out to sea. I mean, it's nice, the salt water. All the magnesium is good for your emotions and all of that. It's good for your skin. You know, we've learned a lot. But who says you have to sit in the sun on vacation? Why is that? What about the snow? Isn't the snow good? Why do you have to ski if you go to the snow? Can anyone explain that to me? Because it's like Mother's Day was commercialized, so was the snow. The snow is gorgeous. Why must you strap yourself into skis and go up a ski lift? Nothing wrong with skiing if you enjoy it. But are you somehow un-American because you don't contribute to the gross national product? If you happen to love looking at the snow falling out of a window and drinking a cognac? Is that un-American? What if you actually just go on a walk, go for a walk without buying something for your feet? Again, you're un-American because you're not contributing to the economy. You didn't buy snowshoes. You didn't buy a parka. You didn't buy a special light. You didn't buy a special, in case you get lost, a beeper, and then food for your pocket. Every American today, like a baby. Like a baby being set out by his mother in a snowsuit. Put on a warm jacket and a hat and go for a walk in the snow with a pair of boots on and enjoy it, or get a sled and go down a hill. No, got to go skiing if you're in the snow. Or don't go out at all. Just go out once on the way to the dining room from the hotel, from the room to the dining room, or from the gambling parlor. You think I don't ski. You're right, I don't. My children do, because I made sure that they were good Americans when they were young. I sacrificed so that they would be good Americans. I didn't want to be accused of being a communist, because I was afraid if they didn't ski, I could be called in for some kind of investigation. The House of Unskiing Association. The House of Unskiing Americans Association. I love the snow, but I don't like sort of risking breaking my neck and getting run over by yahoos on the ski slopes. It's like a job. You're up and down, and idiots with poles and moron clumping, banging bad hamburgers, disgusting beer, packets of ketchup under your feet. Where's the fun in that? It's not James Bond, 1960s, Aston Martin, Ursula Andress, go to the mountains. I'm not in Zurich going up to the... The only sport I learned was the sled. It was a poor boy's snow sport. The sled. In fact, there's a story, of course. I'll bring it back because I can't help it. I'm talking about my life. You're poor in the Bronx, so it snows. What do you think you do if you live in hills? Up in the hills, it was hilly like San Francisco. You don't realize that. People think the Bronx was flat. It wasn't. It was very hilly. God, that's why I like San Francisco. I didn't have any idea. The geography was similar. It was a lot of hills and cobblestone street. Anyway, so we would go on an American Flyer sled down a hill, almost getting killed by trucks with chains. Does anyone remember that? Don't call me and tell me you grew up there, too. You remember those chain drive trucks? They were so big. Could you imagine that trucks that were driven with chain drive in those days? Everything tasted different when you're young. For example, the first time I ate pizza, I to this day remember what it smelled like, vomit. Today you wouldn't ever say that. You're afraid you're going to get, ejected from a pizzeria because you get used to it. But I'll never forget. I was about 9 years old. I never tasted pizza. It was just coming into America. It became big. And we were at our cousin's house in Pennsylvania, and they brought in a thing called a pizza. I was up in the attic. I smelled vomit. I thought someone puked in the kitchen. I swear to God. That was the first reaction I had to pizza. It was, ugh, God, what is that horrible smell? What is that called? Mozzarella cheese? It smells like vomitosa cheese. Maybe it was a different maker then. I don't know. Maybe it was, like a different manufacturer. Because mozzarella cheese today doesn't smell of vomit. Does it? Or like if you never smell it? Does anyone agree with me? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is not fair game. Chicago, Colleen, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. You're so right about the problem that we have across this country with seeing eye dogs being refused from cabs. And actually, in Chicago, we've done something about that. We've passed an ordinance so that they can either be fined or lose their license.
Well, when you say they, who are you referring to? Which cab drivers in particular will drive past a blind woman with a seeing eye dog? You're talking about only one type of cab driver. Say it. You don't have to hide it from me.
Well, it is the Muslims. I'm sorry to say it is, and it is the Somalians.
Why are you sorry to say it? They should be sorry for doing it to you. They should be sorry for being such throat.
I agree. And I used to do an awareness class for the cab drivers to talk to them about the dogs, and I used to tell them that if you want to be in this country and practice, have a profession, then you need to abide by our
laws.
Well,
in Minnesota, they wouldn't take not only seeing eye dogs and blind people, they have the nerve to tell people if you're carrying wine in a like you bought a bottle of wine and you're carrying it in a package unopened, that's their business too. You hear that? Wonderful, freedom-loving people we brought in from Somalia. I don't like Somalia. I don't like what they did to our troops. They dragged the Rangers through the street, okay? It doesn't mean a thing to me that people don't like what I'm saying. I don't like Somalia. They're guests in my country, and they better practice the laws of my country. And I wish we had a country that said to them what I'm saying. Practice the laws of our land or get out of here, Johnson. How's that? Does that work? Put that on the ballot. But you got a bunch of patsies in Minnesota, a bunch of losers, weaklings. What else? What words can I use for them that they'd elect a fat comedian to the Senate? Not that Norm Coleman's a big opposition. Another rhino. What do you want to talk about on the Savage Nation? I'm going to get angry. I don't want to get angry. If I'm going on vacation tomorrow, why should I get angry? Where am I going? I'm not telling you. It's not your business. I'm going into hiding. I'm retreating. I'm withdrawing. I am pulling the cover of the world, the cover over my head to get away from the world. I'm going to try not to use the computer. No more internet. My eyes are killing me. I'm losing my vision. I don't even want to get email. Please don't even send me an email if you know me. Las Vegas, Ken, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, please?
Dr. Savage, I happen to be gay, and I'm really hoping that the radicals out there in California do not succeed in doing an end run around Proposition 8 through litigation. I believe in democracy.
I agree with you. And this is not about hating gay people. It's about saying, for God's sakes, can't you just leave the religious people alone and the normal people? Can't you just leave the heterosexuals alone instead of trying to always force something down their throats?
Well, Dr. Savage, if I had it in my power to take litigation of Prop 8 off the gay agenda, I would. The problem is,
I think it's good. You know, I'm glad you said it, because frankly, you know and I know that gay people today have all of the same legal rights, in fact, more so than the straight person, with regard to hate crimes, for example. But to demand that people who don't want to accept that lifestyle rewrite their religious laws, rewrite common law, rewrite natural law, I don't want to go through the litany, when they voted on it and it was taken from them by three rotten judges in California, or four, then they went to the ballot like good little sheeple and they said, okay, we'll vote again. And now again, these rotten, stinking ACLU, legal lambda groups have the nerve to overturn the people again. What do they think is going to happen? Well, what's going to happen is there'll be 100,000 people up in Sacramento, and they will be demanding the impeachment of the judges, and they're just liable to start setting the gay agenda back 50 years.
Savage, the way it became legal out there was a travesty. I remember the day it happened. I was listening to your show, and I was just up in arms that four judges would throw out the votes of 61 million people, even if they were votes that I may or may not agree with.
You think I didn't like that Obama won, but I didn't see conservatives rioting in the streets, did you?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Well, that's what you call a democracy and the rule of law. I guess some folks in the gay community don't like the rule of law. They like the judges to who they own, by the way, in California to do their bidding, or the attorney general, who obviously is owned by them, or the mayor, who is owned by them. It's sickening. The people have spoken. Gavin Newsom's political career is over. He should understand that. He gambled and he lost. Thanks for the call. I should have given him a free book. Is he still on the line? No, he isn't. Oh, give. He's gone. Sorry about. I wouldn't mind sending a free book, Psychological Nudity. There's not one anti-gay statement in the whole book. Not a dirty word. Nothing. Just people think a book has to be dirty to sell. Here's one. New York Times. It says sex doesn't sell, page 58. I said sex doesn't sell. What am I saying here? Oh, I guess I'm saying is that, that styles are going to change in America. I've been saying we're saturated with the thongs. You know, since Clinton, the degenerate with the thong thing, I never liked thongs. It's unsanitary just looking at them. I gag looking at a thong. Who would want some? Well, I got to stop right here. This is a family show. As a man, I would never wear something that was stuck, and I'll stop right there. I say that the trend in America is to move away from low-cut jeans and tight blouses and visible thongs. I'm not saying we're going to go back to crinolines, and I'm not saying we're going to go back to blouses with bows, but I'm sick of the belly button ring and the thong. And I think it's easier on the women not to have to dress like the slut from the E! Channel, frankly. It's easier on you to dress in crinolines and blouses and bows, I ask. I don't know. It looks like my deceased aunt. I just hope they don't bring back the fur with those foxes in the faces. Those things scared me as a kid. Now we're going way back. That's another story. Forget the 50s. We're talking about my grandmother. May she rest in peace. You remember those fox things? Let me read this page for the kids who don't know what I'm talking about, how far we've come in style. She had a fur piece with a fox on it. She'd come in from the cold. A mixture of the cold fur and a perfume gave me a migraine. I'm sure my migraine started with a perfume. God rest her soul. I don't mean any disrespect. I'd be frightened because I was a little kid. Up close to the fox's head, it looked like a real fox. She'd come in, and then the women of the family would go to talk in the kitchen. I don't know. I guess they'd eat coffee cake, give themselves diabetes and heart attacks. God only knows the poison they put in their bodies. I would hang out in the living room and get hung up on that fox's face with the little teeth. I remember to this day rubbing my little five-year-old fingers along the teeth of the fox. I don't want to go back to those horrendous days. I'll be right back. Savage.
Tens of thousands of people whose lives have been dramatically impacted, quite directly. Their lives completely uprooted because they did nothing except this: fall in love and say, I do.
Nothing. Well, that's Annie Toussaint Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, who has committed Harry Caray by betting that California was ready for homosexual marriage. But, you know, I wrote a book called Liberalism is a Mental Disorder. They're also incapable of accepting reality. The people voted, Gavin. You bet wrong and you lost. You're never going to be governor. It's as simple as that. Now, if you want to shop it to a judge and risk 100,000 people coming to Sacramento demanding that the judges be impeached, go ahead. But I want to repeat to you right now that homosexual marriage was rejected by the people. 7 out of 10 blacks rejected. I know that shocks you because you thought you owned them on your plantation. And why did the black people who voted for Obama reject gay marriage? Because it forces people to sanction or approve of a behavior that they consider destructive to the self and society. That's it. It's exactly what the people think, Gavin. They don't hate gays necessarily. People are going to do what their impulses drive them to do. But it should not be forced on people or on children through indoctrination. That's the reality of today, Gavin. You're living in a dream world if you think you're going to turn it around in the courts. Because if you do, you're liable to have you trigger 100,000, 150,000 people rioting outside the state capitol, demanding the impeachment of the judges. You're going to set the gay movement back 50 years, Gavin. Quit while you're ahead. Just quit while you're ahead. Stop wrecking this country with the pushing of an agenda that the people will never accept. I know they're shocked that black people voted 7 out of 10, Chinese people 7, 8 out of 10. Even Latino people, the older people, it was about, I think it was 50%, 50-50, voted in favor of Prop 8, which is, of course, to support heterosexual marriage. The biggest loser is Gavin Newsom. The second biggest loser is Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown came back from the graveyard of political history and tricked many people into thinking he was a centrist. But as they've seen this man do his work, they realize that once a moonbeam, always a moonbeam. He will not be the next governor. Gavin will not be the next governor. They have made a huge mistake by betting too much of their political fortune on the gay movement. The people just don't want it. And by the way, I told you that the first group to throw tons of money at Obama were the gays of Hollywood, the billionaires. If you read the Drudge Report today, top left article, Geffen was the first one. I knew this because I have very good friends in Hollywood, in very high circles. This was Hollywood's dream. It was Geffen who brought together the first coalition of huge money, so far as I know, for Obama. And guess what? Guess what? They have not been rewarded with homosexual marriage.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. Always a pleasure and an honor to sit behind the microphone for Michael from time to time. 1-800-449-TALK, 1-800-449-8255. You know, it had to happen, didn't it? It had to happen. Yes. A lot of people volunteered, but they volunteered in historic numbers, to work on the Obama campaign. And that's okay, certainly. We're volunteers on both sides. There was a little trouble, however, at some of the volunteer headquarters. It was sort of an ironic observation of mine when I looked at this and I thought, wait a minute, what are they upset about? You know, we've been asking the same thing for years and years. Well, listen, go ahead and listen.
The line was long, the crowd at times angry.
All my money today. It's my money. I want it right now.
These temporary workers were hired in the final days of the Obama campaign to help volunteers canvass neighborhoods. They showed up to get paid Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock.
And there was a note on the door saying 1. And then at 1:20, everybody was like, why are we, nobody's here? So, and they just got here and they're trying to get it organized.
The large gathering of people prompted police to call in extra officers and also set up these temporary barricades. The barricades helped keep the crowd from spilling out onto Meridian Street. Police say the several hundred people in line were, for the most part, orderly.
No arrests. Some of the people were upset at first because the line wasn't moving as fast.
What, are you kidding me? Can you imagine them arresting just one person?
Haven't had any problems.
If you are past J in the alphabet, just go relax a little bit.
Eventually, people did start getting paid. But some said they were missing hours and told to fill out paperwork making their claim that eventually they would get a check in the mail.
That's not right. And I'm disappointed. I'm glad for the president, but I'm still disappointed in the system.
Yeah.
A total of 375 people were part of this Vote Corps program. A former spokesman for the Obama campaign, which officially no longer exists, says that everyone who worked for the campaign will eventually be getting paid.
Yeah, the check's in the mail. I'm sorry. I find some macabre humor in this. It's my money. I want it right now. Yeah, well, I know how you feel, partner. I mean, we've all been saying that for quite a few years now. Yeah, well, I'm okay with the president getting elected and all that, but this isn't right. You know, this is our money. Well, welcome. Welcome to the fold. Welcome to the fold. This is exactly the problem with the Democratic Party. First of all, being defined by the ultra-liberal, which is everybody can have everything all the time. Well, you can't. It's my money, and I want it right now. Well, welcome to taxation without representation. You know, a lot of us have been saying this for a lot of years, so it's good to have your support. You know, believe it or not, some of these people actually thought that Barack Obama would be ushering in not only socialism, but even a better welfare state. He's in the White House, so we're all getting checks. Where's my money? Well, see, there's not a giant lockbox in the White House that you unlock and just start passing out bills. It doesn't work that way. You know, for all the problems we had during this campaign and this election, the people that supported Barack Obama that perhaps never voted before, were not politically involved, were voting for themselves gifts from the Treasury, that didn't really know the issues and could care less. They were simply looking for more stuff from the government. You know, maybe this is a good thing. It's a wake-up call, perhaps. that no, that's not the way government works. It can't work that way. A larger government doesn't necessarily mean a better lifestyle. It was just absolutely hilarious. And of course, you heard from the lady. I can't recall her name. She was just absolutely beside herself. Of course, this is before she tried to get paid for her volunteer work from the Obama campaign. I no longer have to worry about putting gas in my tank. I no longer have to worry about making my mortgage payment. He said if I help him, he'll help me. You know, glory, glory, it's a wondrous day. Well, a lot of these people are going to get a reality check, and they're going to see it has nothing to do with skin color. It has nothing to do with environmental input into your life. It has to do with the way of government. Government, generally speaking, takes 10 times as long as the private sector, and it was less efficient. So, was Obama, I guess he was briefed by the CIA today. I would love to be a fly on the wall in that meeting. Well, President-elect Obama, congratulations and all of that, but as far as having any security clearances, we just can't give them to you. You don't even pass for the lowest level security clearance. You know, you heard Michael talking about McCain, and I really don't have much to say about McCain because there's not much to say other than he ran one of the most pitifully run campaigns I can ever remember in my adult life. It was though he didn't really care about winning. Do you recall early on, and I don't know if we've got the sound, but early on in the campaign when McCain first came out, he kept praising Obama. He's a nice guy. He's a family guy. He's a smart guy. He's a wonderful guy. He's an athletic guy. I sure like his suit. You remember that? It was just, you know, I was thinking back. You're in a campaign. You're running for president. Why would you heap upon your opposition any form of flattery, any accolades of any kind? I mean, this is what happens. If you want to know what happens when you try to be all things to all people, look at John McCain. Go ahead and play that if you would.
I want to be president of the United States, and obviously I do not want Senator Obama to be. But I have to tell you, he is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as president of the United States. Now, Look, if I didn't think I wouldn't be one heck of a lot better president, I wouldn't be running, okay? And
bad
that's
save.
The point. That's the point.
You don't have to be scared of Barack Obama. I mean, that is almost, you know, I'm not into conspiracy theories. I don't think black helicopters are hovering just about above cloud cover spying on me with some infrared camera. I'm just not that damn interesting. But it's almost conspiratorial. I mean, if you could play that one more time, I want you to listen. You don't have to be scared of a guy like this being president. Now, why would you say that? Kicking off a campaign to run against him, if you don't mind, guys. I don't mean to be redundant, but it's important. Listen to this critically.
I want to be president of the United States, and obviously I do not want Senator Obama to be. But I have to tell you, he is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as president of the United States. Now,
stop right there. Why would he say that? Why would he say that? Where did that come from? You know, what positive could you get out of that comment at all? You don't have to be Obama. He's a good guy, and you don't have to be scared of him as president, as though it's a foregone conclusion. One of the many, many, many McCain missteps during the campaign, at the very least. And I suppose if you're into conspiracies, maybe something else. There were so many of these things all throughout the campaign. I just don't understand. But it is a new day for the Obama supporters. Reality is starting to set in, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Now they can get in the boat with the rest of us and deal with it. Chicago, Illinois, Ron, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. How you doing, Ron?
Yeah, hi. I called about the fairness doctrine. Schumer's been running around demonizing the fairness doctrine.
Yeah, comparing it to pornography, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I listen to political speech all day long. I can turn on any TV channel, PBS, it's all political speech, and I've been listening to it for 8 years or actually 40 years. And when they talk about that fairness doctrine being reinstituted, the public should be frightened because that's the legislation of, in his perspective, political speech, but it's free speech.
Well, yeah, it is. Ron, I don't think, honestly, I'm not as nearly as fearful of as the fairness doctrine as I am pressure put on large corporations. And I tell you why. You know, the fairness doctrine was trotted out a long time ago. And I think new media may have outmoded the fairness doctrine, quite honestly. You know, the fairness doctrine is a difficult issue for President-elect Barack Obama and his whole Democratic Congress. And it's difficult. I know they want it, or some semblance of the fairness doctrine, but they have to take into consideration today's new media. You know, it's increasingly difficult. It's kind of, okay, look at it this way. It's like a balloon. If you want it to go there, and I'm not saying we do, but if you want it to go there, well, when you squeeze one end of the balloon, simply the conversation can just go someplace else. It's you grab it there, it goes here. You grab it there, it goes back. I think even if you wanted to go back to the fairness doctrine, technology may have passed it by. Now, that's not to say that talk radio wouldn't take a hit, but the freedom of speech, I think, would continue on through some other media outlet. I don't know if that makes sense. I hope it does. But there was no new media, per se, when the fairness doctrine was first trotted out. You know, I mean, yeah, you can put down talk radio here. It moves to the Internet, to any number of blogs. And then it goes, my God, I got information on my BlackBerry that I used to have to wait a day for. I mean, it's insane. So I don't know just exactly how they will deal with that. People like Savage, certainly targets. But if you can put down enough savages, and really there's only one, and then those that aspire to be savage, if you put those guys down, then you curtail. You don't eradicate, but you can certainly curtail freedom of speech. But I think if you did that, you would absolutely have another American Revolution on your hands. You know, and I'm speaking figuratively, not literally. All right, so let's not start calling the attorneys. All right, this is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. We're going to talk about Prop 8. How many times does a state have to say, no, we don't want this, before it actually comes to fruition? Oh, wait a minute. You're saying my voice doesn't count? Well, not if you're dressed in a black robe and you're with the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals. We're going to talk about Prop 8 in just a second. Gavin Newsom, I agree with Savage. I think he's done. He's toast. You know, he may set up a storefront, you know, in one of the San Francisco neighborhoods, and go into, I don't know, maybe a whole chain of gay bathhouses. I don't know. But having said that, I think his political career is pretty much over, because you take into consideration California as a state goes, is pretty liberal. I mean, the rest of the country looks at California and goes, you know, man, what are these idiots thinking? Well, contrary to popular belief, we're not idiots. We're all not walking around bumping into palm trees, and not all of us are from here originally. And there are a lot of good conservatives in California. But you would have to ask yourself the reason why a state as liberal as California would not vote once but twice against gay marriage. Well, I've got several reasons that are floating around in my head. I'll take yours in just a second. Rick Roberts, setting in for Michael Savage. I want to remind you, go to michaelsavage.com, his fifth book, Psychological Nudity. You can get all that information there. You're on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Tens of thousands of people. His lives have been dramatically impacted, quite directly. Their lives completely uprooted because they did nothing except this: fall in love and say, I do. Nothing more extraordinary than that.
What a day in San Francisco! What a day in California! What a day for America! What a day for equality! By the way, as California goes, so goes the rest of the nation.
Oh, jeez. Gavin Newsom. Yeah, you heard Michael earlier say that, in his opinion, Newsom's political career was over. And, man, I couldn't agree more. You know, this guy is all over the board. And I'm speaking legislatively. As California goes, so goes the nation. You know, I'd be very careful. What a difference a day makes. You know, these people, their lives have been uprooted simply for falling in love and saying, I do. You know, this free to be you and me hug a tree, tofu chomping, Birkenstock wearing, cave dwelling, Volvo driving ponytail boy. I just don't understand. I don't care who you bed. I don't care who you go out with. I don't. That's none of my business. I don't care. Don't make it my business. Any more than you care about me. If it's the legalities you're worried about, you've got the civil unions. All right? Please. You're asking to be validated. You can't legislate how someone feels about something. You know, if anyone should know that, it should be a liberal. You can't legislate how people feel. You can legislate how they react by enacting laws. But you can't legislate how they feel. No matter how hard they try, California keeps saying no. 60, 70, 80, 90 million people say no. We don't want that. Thank you very much. Have your gay pride parades. Have your civil unions. Do whatever it is you want to do. But marriage is reserved for men and women under a religious doctrine. All right? You know, I started thinking about this when I listened to this guy. I wish Gavin Newsom really believed that. Because California went against gay marriage again for the second time. And funny enough, so did the nation. So did the nation. I don't know. So maybe Gavin Newsom was right. I just don't know why we have to keep going over this same piece of road. All right? We don't want that. We have voted. Our voice has been heard. The constitutionality has been tested. Now get over it and go on down the road. All right? You know, I'd love to be a jet fighter pilot, but I'm probably not going to be doing that. I'm probably not. Well, you could do it if you wanted to. See, I just don't understand. The legal unions as set out by many different states accomplish all the legal issues involved in a marriage. It's a religious ceremony, all right? If you want a religious ceremony, find a priest or a priestess or, you know, whomever. Somebody's got a collar. Somebody will give you the little ceremony. Legally, you've got a civil union. Now, can we move on? Because you're never going to get people to validate in totality the behavior. So accept that as reality and move on. New York, let's go to Bernardo. Bernardo, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Mr. Roberts and your listeners. You're doing a wonderful job as always. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
I wanted to say that the expectations towards the Obama presidency have been set so high because, like, I think it was one of Hitler's minions who said, the bigger the lie, the more people will believe it. And
right on, Mark Bernardo. Right on, Mark. You're absolutely right. I'll discuss that in just a second. This is Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage. This is Rick Roberts, sitting in for Michael Savage, and you're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. Always a pleasure. To be in for Michael when he's away from time to time. I want to remind you, go to michaelsavage.com, michaelsavage.com. His fifth book, all four of his previous books were bestsellers. I'm sure this is destined to be as well. You can get his book at michaelsavage.com, the newest, the fifth book, Psychological Nudity. And you need to take a look at this. It is absolutely a phenomenal read, a compilation of all the stories you've heard Michael talk about here on the Savage Nation. So go there, make some time, and plan to spend a little time there at this, michaelsavage.com. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at it right now as I'm talking. Probably shouldn't read and talk at the same time. But having said that, you need to go there. Lots of stuff going on there in the book as well. Now, we were talking about Prop 8. Not once, but twice, the people of California have said, no, we don't want marriage to be extended to anyone other than one man and one woman. And that's fair enough. You ask me to vote on something, I tell you what I think, and then it's overturned by activist judges. You know, I know the gay marriage ban passing in California is a sensitive topic for many of you out there. Personally, I think it's pretty horrible that people had to vote again on whether to support their faith or support their gay friends and family members. I think you can do both, but you can't keep poking that dog with a stick because eventually he's going to bite you. This thing's getting out of control already. Now, how do I say this? I've heard ad nauseum activists for the gay community. We're all about love. I'm not trying to be hateful toward gay. Don't get me wrong. I'm just trying to suggest that calm heads need to prevail here. Leadership needs to come out of the gay community, urging people to calm down and, hey, just like the rest of us, when you lose an election, regroup, find a different angle, and try to get them next election. So the people voted, not once, but twice. You didn't like the results. You know what? Me neither. I didn't like several of the election results in the last couple of days, but I believe in the process. I have to. And I'm not going on gay chat rooms and talking about burning down Mormon churches, all right? Oh, yeah, yeah, these people that profess to be, we're all about love and we're just like you. And, well, have you seen some of the activist stuff out there? Burn their, I can't say that, churches to the ground, then tax the charred timbers. I'm not making this up. I'm not making this up. That was posted within hours of California officials declaring Proposition 8 had been approved. By a margin of 52 to 48%, I believe. On another one, I hope the No on 8 people have a long list and long knives. Here's another one. I've never considered being a violent radical extremist for our equal rights, but now I think maybe I should consider becoming one. Perhaps that is the only thing that will affect change we so desperately need and deserve. Another one, I swear I'd murder people with my bare hands. And it goes on. And it's pretty nasty. It's pretty nasty. But just as Muslims were noticeably silent when radical Islam reared its ugly head in this country, so too is the gay community. You don't hear the gay community coming out against these activist people and their blogs and their internet sites and the stuff on the 5 o'clock news. You don't hear the other side of the gay community. No, because they don't want to be ostracized by their community or by us, the straight community. You know, it's time to get on with this thing. San Francisco, Bob. Bob, thanks for waiting. How you doing, Bob?
Great. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I just want to say, you know, I voted yes. I didn't vote no against anything. I voted yes on 8. And I'm voting the question, is marriage between a man and a woman? Yes. Is marriage between a man and a man? No, that's gay marriage. And if they want to make up a new thing called gay marriage, then I'll approve that. Gay marriage, yes. But don't redefine what we call marriage.
You know, that's an interesting point, Bob. If you want to create a special ceremony for gay men or gay, truly don't. I don't condone it, but I'm not gay. What do I know? You know, go off and do that if that's what you want to do. But you can't diminish the groundwork, the foundation of a theological ceremony known as marriage by allowing something to happen within that ceremony that ceremony doesn't cover. If you want to create something else, be my guest. That's what America's...
Oh, my honor. Hey, you know, my actual call was talking about with McCain. It sounded like he really ad-libbed, you know, his rebuttal when he mentioned that Obama, you know, he's a really good guy and all that, but he got booed up and, you know, and he tried to ad-lib it. But anyways, now we're talking about Prop 8. I voted yes on Prop 8. You know, I'm a church-going man myself, and the Bible says that homosexuality, it's an abomination, you know, and for these guys to try to, you know, influence us and make us believe that, you know, everything's okay and it's all right. You know, it's just wrong in my eyes, you know, and a lot of the nation, you know, our state voted, you know, that they're in agreement with, you know, what the Bible says, you know.
Well, you know, see, Ted, this is the, I don't know, I was raised by my grandparents, God rest their soul, and they gave me a great work ethic, I think. They gave me great morals that I didn't appreciate at the time, but later appreciated as I grew older. They gave me a track to run on, which I jumped many times, but could always find my way back. And, yeah, they were very, very religious. I mean, we were in church on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday chili supper. I mean, we were there. If the doors were open, we were there. And I probably rejected that to some degree in my youth. And then, you know, it's a good thing I had the foundation because I could go back to it. But, you know, I'm not going to sit in judgment of another man's faith, unless, of course, you're talking about radical Islam, which I don't even view as a faith. But an ideology, a very violent one at that. But, you know, you believe however you want to believe. I believe in Jesus Christ as the living Son of the living God. That's me, all right? That works for me. You believe in whatever you want to believe. You know, if you want to ask me about something that my faith encompasses. It doesn't embarrass me. It's, well, not in this venue. I don't do the God Hour on my show, but if somebody asks me, yeah, I'll tell you what I think. As far as how gays interpret the Bible, I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. And you know what? I got enough rowing my own boat. But I know that marriage, as it has been historically performed in this country, is between men and women, women and men, and not any convoluted combination of those two things. And that's the religious ceremony that people accept. Now, if gays want to be a part of that, sorry, you can't. If you want to start something on your own, be my guest. You interpret scripture different than I, and you want to create a theology based around that interpretation, be my guest. You have the freedom to do that. But I'm sick and tired of hammering the same thing over and over again. And then above and beyond that, why the hell are you asking me to vote on something if you don't like the results? I got to do it over again. That's not democracy. You know, that's just beating your opponents down until they finally throw their hands up and say, okay, you win. I'm tired of this. But you can't do that. You can't do that. Ronald Reagan, back in 64, in the speech, told us as much. You can't do that. You know, not peace through capitulation, not peace through surrender, not peace through compromise, peace through strength. And that means at the voting booth as well. You know, you're not going to wear people out. You know, after a while, I get a little tired of it. We'd like you to vote on this. We did, twice. You know, we ought to sue them just to accept the results of the poll. Or not the poll, but the vote. All right. 1-800-449-TALK, 1-800-449-8255, Sacramento, Alex. Alex, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I'm first-generation Hungarian, born in this country, and I was talking about the election with my mother, who's 70 years old, and she was telling me how she was born in a communist country. Her happiest day of her life was when she was 18, and she got an airplane ticket to come to the United States to be in a free country. And after all these years, she's now 70, she's telling me that she's in tears because she feels like she's going to die in a communist country.
Yeah, I've talked to so many people who are first generation and having conversations with their parents. And, you know, some of the people, you've even heard Michael talking with some of the people that called in. These immigrants, legal immigrants, by the way, and that's a topic that we need to get a hold of here pretty soon as well, because that one didn't go away. These legal immigrants are shaking their heads. They're frantic. They're wondering, wait a minute, what are you doing? You don't know what you have here. You absolutely do not understand what America means to the rest of the world, the land of opportunity, the land of freedom, the land where you can worship as you see fit, a land where you can go from absolutely nothing to some level of success and be informed and speak freely. And, of course, those of us that live here that have been given so much, so long, for so little required of us, we start to take that for granted, and we want to change things. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, we want to change things. And these people just don't get it, because they came from a place where they had nothing, literally nothing. The spirit of their existence was trampled and oppressed by communist governments. So, Alex, you know, if I were speaking to your mother, I would say, look, we went through this almost 45 years ago with what was then perceived as socialist regime, socialist presidential administration. We had the same fears then that we've got now. The only thing that's changed is the numbers. And once again, true patriotic Americans on both sides of the aisle, by the way, will stand up. They will hold the line. They will fight the fight, because there is too much to be lost by letting this country go the way of socialism or Marxism or even communism. Bob in Albany, New York. Bob, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. How you doing, Bob?
Yeah, how you doing tonight? Thanks Very for good. My call. You're a tough show to get on.
Michael Savage in the Savage Nation is a very, very popular show, as Michael has told you many times.
What I wanted to say, welcome to the USSA. How's that? Pretty good?
Well, that is, except I'm not going to accept that just yet. Who was it that said I'd rather live on my knees in peace than die on my feet? I don't agree with that. You know, you don't fight until the last breath leaves your body. You don't quit the fight. And especially think about it, Bob. Think about, since the inception of this country, all of the men that have died trying to preserve this thing, this intangible that you can't see, you can't touch, you can't feel, but you know it exists because it built an entire country. the spirit of freedom. How many people died? How many people had their families disrupted? How many people's lives were changed forever because they fought to preserve that which they knew could never be replaced, the spirit of freedom? And most of them came from someplace else to start that country. I mean, going all the way back to the Revolutionary War. I mean, you know, Bob, that's not something you simply give up with a keystroke or with a pen. You just don't do that.
I understand, absolutely. But I know what's going on, you know, in my community. I see what's going on, and I really don't like it because we whole communities just in the last 20 years have been transformed into socialized third world ghettos. They've been handing out mental health diagnoses and felony convictions like candy around here. I mean, you got three kids getting SSI Social Security in one household, you know. It's insane.
Well, you know, Bob, it was probably, I don't know, it was longer than that, probably 15 years ago. I did an investigative report for the radio station I was working for. Went out on the streets with some other folks, and we did an investigation. One liquor store, and we're not talking like a big, shopping center type liquor store. We're talking one of these, single foreign-owned corner liquor stores that had the bars on the windows. They were cashing over $500,000 in SSI checks per month. People were driving in across the border to this place. No money changed hands. It was all given in the form of credit for booze. And there was nothing wrong with these people. We did hidden camera stuff and all this. You know, these people were healthier than I was, for God's sake. There's abuse out there. Anytime you give people something for nothing, it will always be abused. And it will never, ever be enough. Good call. I appreciate it. Lori in Portland. Lori, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, thank you for having me. Listen, I wanted to make a comment regarding the McCain saying that, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of Obama. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of Republicans out here that are afraid of what Obama can do and will do now that he's in power.
Oh, I agree. And to make matters worse, you've got a democratically controlled Congress, not a supermajority, but a majority nonetheless.
Exactly. And so, you know, us as conservatives, we're looking at our gun control coming into play. We're looking at losing a lot of rights and small businesses. He's going to drive so many small businesses out of business because of his spreading the wealth. And we don't know who he is. We really don't know who Obama is. He never.
And you know what, Lori? Forgive me for interrupting. I venture to say you're never going to know who he is, not in totality. I don't think it will be revealed in the first year, second year, third year of his administration. I think you're right. If he is allowed to rule in the way that he campaigned, small businesses will be kicked to the curb. Larger businesses will be more willing to go overseas, even though there's an initial investment that they probably don't want. But, you know, as Michael was talking a little bit earlier, I don't know if we have as much to fear as we did during the campaign. Number one, he's already started backpedaling on his promises during his acceptance speech. Well, I can't do it overnight. Maybe not in the first year. Maybe not in the first 4 years. Well, he's right. He can't. This country wasn't built overnight. It won't be torn asunder overnight because true conservatives and, you know, common sense Democrats, they won't allow that to happen. There's too much at stake. Lori, good call. I appreciate it. This is Rick Roberts sitting in for Michael Savage, and you're on the Savage Nation. Savage. Rick Roberts, setting in for Michael Savage. You're on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity once again. Always want to remind you, go to michaelsavage.com. You're going to find all the information that you heard or possibly didn't hear on the show. You get all the information and the book, Michael's fifth book, Psychological Nudity. And when you go there, I've had people email me later and say, you know, I went there, but I only had 5 minutes and ended up being late for my meeting. Yeah, listen, if you only have 5 minutes, don't go there. Wait until you have a little bit of time. Because you'll want to spend some time. It's michaelsavage.com. Let's go to Las Vegas. Las Vegas, Rachel. Rachel, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to say Obama has fooled our nation. See how it happens. I'm a fourth-generation Nevadan, and to see Nevada go blue sure made my heart hurt. I'm as a conservative, from a strong conservative, hardworking small business family, I am scared for our nation, but I know that there are other people just like me, and we'll recover, and we're just going to have to work hard to do it.
You know, that's a good point, because you state the obvious in a very succinct way, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. We've been here as a nation before, and if any nation on this planet can pull themselves out of a mess like this, it's us. But, you know, when you say Obama fooled the public, I disagree with that a bit, Rachel, and I'll tell you why. If you listen to all of the coverage on the Obama campaign, the people that were supporting Obama, and I mean this with all sincerity, those people that supported Obama, they didn't care whether he had a birth certificate or not. They didn't care if he was born in America or planet Xenon. They didn't really care whether he was hanging out with a domestic terrorist in the person of William Ayers. They didn't really care about his Kenya connection. They didn't care that he had basically zero political experience on his resume. They didn't care that they didn't know anything about him. As a matter of fact, I think that probably worked in his favor to his supporters. When I say his supporters, I'm talking about that tsunami wave of Democratic support that went out from one coast to the other. I mean, you see it in the local elections. You see it from state to state. It was amazing, that tsunami wave of Democratic support that went out. Some people, because of their blind hatred of Bush and the perception of what he did or didn't do, they would have voted for anybody other than someone that might even be a little bit like Bush. It was the Democrats' time. I mean, they didn't want to be concerned with the details. They didn't want to be concerned with the facts. They did, you know, don't bother me with the truth. I'm voting for the guy. I don't care what you say. Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. And, well, I guess it took a Jimmy Carter to get us a Ronald Reagan. So.
that's the best quote of the day. It took a Jimmy Carter to get us a Ronald Reagan. I'd take a Ronald Reagan after a Barack Obama, even after 48 hours. Rachel, great call. Don't be a stranger to the Savage Nation. This is Rick Roberts, setting in for Michael Savage. I want to remind you once again, michaelsavage.com, the book Psychological Nudity. Always a pleasure, Michael. Thanks for the opportunity. This is the Savage Nation.